Okay, looks like we're all set.
We're going to start with the table, right?
Sure.
All right. I got the table up. I realize that's in the recording now. Excellent.
What's in the recording now?
Oh, you didn't hear me? Never mind.
Oh, no, I didn't hear you, so you're fine.
Oh, good.
So did anyone look at the table and come up with new ideas for codes that should be in that should be in the table?
Yes.
Okay.
I actually had for the first block in the upper left-hand corner, since we're saying that they focus on matters not relevant to selection, if we're consistent with what we did elsewhere, I think that if they have a single statement about sampling but multiple statements that are unrelated, that would fall in that box if we're consistent with what we did in the last two boxes of the table. Did that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, and I think that was the case that Jackie had pointed out a little while ago, too. And I was thinking about that, too, when I went through. So that's certainly something I'm okay with.
Yeah.
The other question I had about this box, and I think it would hold for the entire first row of the table, but so it says focuses on contextual or statistical matters. And I realized that our hypothesis, so I had edited this to include or statistical, but then I realized that our hypothesis really is about contextual factors. It's not about them bringing in excess statistical baggage. It's about them bringing in excess contextual baggage. So I was wondering if we should delete or statistical and really just have it focus on the contextual thing. So either a UC, an NC, or possibly an NB, and multiple both, because there's still context in that.
Well, and that might actually help answer one of my questions, was when I see like a U or an like an M, is that including M of everything or a specific one? So I was unsure about that.
Yeah, in my notation, I meant it to include everything. If I didn't specify, I meant it to include everything. But then as I was going through and looking at it, I'm like, well, you know, we classified the statistical information, but I don't think it's really relevant to our hypotheses, because our hypotheses are specifically about contextual factors.
I agree with you, because when I was looking through my second set of data, I noticed there were a lot of students who only referenced the p-value.
Yes.
Which meant they would get a 0 for a 1 and a US for a 2, and the way that we have it currently set up in the table, we would say that supports our hypothesis, but it doesn't.
Right.
So I agree.
Yeah.
Does everyone agree with that then?
Yeah.
Okay. I will delete that from the table then. So it'll just say focuses on contextual matters not relevant to selection. And then, so what I have for the codes now, you could have 102UC is one possible code that would fit that cell, or I think that whole row. 102NC or MB, and then 1P, 2NC or MB, and 1U, 2NC or MB.
Are we classifying P in general as being in this box? That was one question I had. Are there some instances where the P's wouldn't actually go in this box?
I suppose, because P, that's actually a good point. P does kind of include like a single incorrect idea or multiple incorrect ideas. Like if they had everything wrong, they wouldn't have gotten an M. Because in my mind, that was still, if everything you wrote down on the page was wrong, that was still, you missed the point of the task, which I took as kind of the substantive meaning of the P level. So maybe we should exclude P from this or maybe look more carefully at those.
I mean, I guess I thought our second question would be the more important part here anyway. Like, so the coding for the second one, I think, is more important for this than the first one, necessarily. So, like, I didn't have a problem with the P because it's like, they had an idea statistically, but, like, you know, they're saying that the sample is random when it's not. Or, I mean, that's still bad, but then if they're also doing the contextual thing, I do think that they belong in this box. Which is where I think that the two equals other things implying that.
So should we put it to a vote? Include P, don't include P? Or Lee, do you have an opinion on this?
Yeah, I was just thinking that P still includes, even if they're doing it incorrectly, they're still focusing on the sampling method. Or at least there's something with the sampling method. So I think we still want to include it.
I mean, I guess I would say I would expect something statistical since it's a statistical class.
Well, what if they have 5 sentences in their answer, and 4 of the sentences focus on sampling, but it's completely wrong. 1 sentence focuses on context, unrelated. I don't think that really, I mean, based on the way that we have it.
Well, they would have to have at least 2 sentences that focused on context, because it is with an M. I didn't do a P and a U together. So that may help address that, is they have kind of equal parts to some extent. They may have equal parts contextual and selection, but the selection part is all wrong anyway. So they're still clearly confused about that.
Can you guys hold on a second? I think it's raining in my window. We're having a major thunderstorm, and I hear something hitting inside my house. I'll be right back.
Okay. We are in the middle of a heat wave here. We've got like 96 or 8 or something horrific today. Basically, it's hot enough you don't want to go outside.
That's not how it is here.
Well, actually, 86 right now. Actually kind of nice.
That's beautiful. It was 85 the other day, and I honestly thought to myself, because we had like a week of all 90s.
Sorry.
And then we're talking about weather now, you're right. We had a week of like all 90s, and then we had one day that was 85, and I actually thought, man, it's going to be a little chilly today. I was like, oh, that's a twist in perspective.
My windows are down. It's just hail.
Okay, good. I'm glad your house isn't leaking. Okay, so are we okay including the P as long as it's with multiple criteria in the second, under the second question, the irrelevant stuff? Either MC or, well, I guess maybe then we should get rid of MB because that may be 1 statistical, 1 contextual. Or we could just say for certain codes combinations, we might have to go back and look at them a little more carefully.
So in Tara's example, that would get a P. Sorry, so there's like 4 sentences of incorrect sampling stuff and then 1 of contextual.
So that wouldn't go here.
Yeah.
That would go here.
But if they did 3 and 2, it would.
Yes.
But the focus, if we're just going based on content, the focus really wasn't on not relevant matters in that scenario.
Okay.
So maybe what we need to say is in this case, we have to look at this more carefully.
For P's?
Yeah, for P's.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, not make it sort of a catch-all.
Yeah.
Sort of.
I know it's certainly in this first case, with the luggage example, I don't think there would be many examples that would fall into this. I don't know how that will be for later, later examples, if there will be a lot. But for the luggage case, I don't think we would have many we would need to worry about.
I'm going to be a shock if my students give me more than two ideas total.
Yeah. We have a student that wrote five sentences, and we're doing well. Anyway.
So then probably would the similar things go into our right box?
Yeah, did anyone have any different for the right box from the left box here?
Mm-mm.
Yep.
Okay. For the middle row of the table, I actually struggled a little bit with this correct, incorrect thing again. Looking at what I have here, I think their answers would still focus on selection, but in the left cell, I was thinking of it as they were incorrectly focusing on selection, and in the right cell, it was more correct. But then I realized there were some students who would have something recognizing bias, but they would still manage to screw something up in their answer. So I'm not sure we can really just divide it among correct, incorrect. And how to handle that. Did anyone have any similar thoughts on this row or any ideas of how to tackle this row?
That's interesting. The way that I approach this was I created a blank table.
Mm-hmm.
And then I made a list of all the possible combinations, and I put them in myself, and then I went back and compared what you had, and I actually ended up with the exact same breakdown in the middle row that you had when I did it originally.
Okay.
But
so do you think we need to pay attention to correct or incorrect here? Because that's kind of, when I wrote out what I was expecting to see in these cells, I was expecting, you know, based on what I thought I would see and then thinking about what the problem actually was, in one case, in the left column, they were mistakenly saying something bad about the sample because there's going to be that disconnect between their opinion and what the study says. And so that's the case where there's the evidence that they'll call things into question. But it was actually a good sample, so they would be wrong calling things into question.
But
go ahead.
I think to support our hypothesis, they would have to call things into question because of unrelated matter. Like, I don't think just because they incorrectly called things into question, that would automatically support our hypothesis. I think we would have to see evidence where they were questioning the sample because this, this, and this, or they have to have something unrelated. Does that make sense?
I understand what you're saying, but I don't necessarily agree because there were cases where someone would say, if it was a random sample, someone would say, no, this sample isn't appropriate because they didn't select things properly. And they would kind of describe, oh, they didn't take enough airports, which we put under relevant, but it was also bringing in kind of knowledge of, you know, there's a lot of airports across the country, but we only took a small amount of them. I think they could still have
But
I think they could have a 2 equals 0 here and still fall into the cell if they are. Because I think in this case, they'll pick apart the sampling method using any means available to them. They may try and say it's biased even though it's not.
But how would we know that they were doing it not because they didn't understand statistics, but because they were looking for evidence to support their prior beliefs? Hello?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, we lost power. We got all kinds of stuff going on, so just making sure I didn't lose my phone, too. Holy crap. Sorry. There's, like, lightning strikes outside my window, and it's kind of freaking me out. I just don't want to get struck by lightning on the phone.
Oh, at least there's not a phone cord tethered to the wall, isn't
there? Oh, no, there is. I'm on my landline.
Oh, okay.
That's why I'm freaking out a little. Which is funny.
Maybe you should switch to your cell phone.
Yeah.
Risk the radiation poisoning, but.
Well, unfortunately, its battery is low and it's also plugged into the wall at the moment. Because I was on the phone with my mom earlier for an hour. Okay. Anyway, so how would we know the difference?
I guess that's actually a good question. Does anyone have any thoughts on that?
I don't think they'll ever know why they did it.
Yeah, that was what I
was. Kind of the point. Because we're not going to really know, okay, that's why they made this conclusion. I don't think we're going to know why.
But if we don't know why, then how does it support our hypothesis? Because our hypothesis is the reason that they're doing these things is because it doesn't support their prior beliefs or their previous knowledge. So don't, by definition, we have to know why to say that they're supporting us?
Well, I mean, I think unless we literally come out and ask the students, why do you say that? We're not going to know exactly why.
Yeah. I mean, we did ask them to explain, which we were trying to get at why, but they don't always do a very good job explaining. I could conceive of a situation where a student would get a random sample and say, no, this sample is not representative for reason X, Y, Z. And really, any time you're identifying a possible source of bias, in my mind, that is kind of necessarily contextual because recognizing bias depends on the situation. And so they would be incorrect, but they still would have been classified under the first column. So I think they would be incorrectly swayed by contextual factors, but it still would have gone under the first column because bias is also relevant to selection. So maybe, again, we need to flag, maybe we really just need to flag everything that ends up in this row and just kind of go back and look a little bit more and see, are they incorrect because they're talking about bias when we told them they had a random sample, or are they incorrect because they just have no clue what they're talking about, in which case they probably don't belong here.
Right, because the way it's coded right now, if they just said, suppose it was random and they said no because the sample was too small, I mean, they would go in this box, right? Because we would give them a P, and they would get a 0 for 2. So we would put them in this box as supporting our hypothesis.
But we can't be sure whether they're saying the sample is too small because they're bringing in some sort of contextual knowledge about how big the population is or because they just think that's a small number.
Right.
You actually make a good point. So then do we, I hate to say this, but I think we have one of two options. We can either resolve that for the students that would fall in this row, we need to go back and look at their, if they have one of these code patterns, we need to go look at them a little more carefully. Or we might need to talk about refining the coding system so that it would be obvious.
Well, I was just going to say, I think we have to, we're not going to, I mean, Tara makes a good point. We're not going to know why they picked apart the sampling method or they didn't pick apart the sampling method or et cetera. I think, if I remember our hypothesis correctly, it's that if they had a strong opinion, they're more likely to go after the sampling method or more likely, and we're just trying to find evidence in their response to kind of support that idea that they're more likely, if they had a strong opinion and the result disagrees with what they thought, that they're more likely to try to pull it apart. And we're just trying to, you know, dissect that a little bit more with the qualitative coding of the responses. And just, I guess
I think like, sorry, go ahead, Lee.
I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry if I made me extend a little time on your things. I mean, I think, kind of like with what Leah is saying, I think we are making sure that we're not looking at this, that we're trying to find 100% in these cells. That's not what we're looking for, right? They kind of seem like we're trying to get really, really picky at exactly what we want to have on there. It makes them look almost like, okay, we're going to have 100% in here.
Yeah.
I think what I'm having problems with is taking the statement that we have in the cell in conjunction with the coding that we're putting here and tying it back to our overall research question. That's where I see a disconnect. I don't think
I'd say at this point we said that they'd be more likely to call in questions like and think that there's something wrong with the sample, even though the sample was fine.
Yeah. I think I see what both people are trying to say. Tara, I think what you're saying is when we were conceiving of our study and kind of our big guiding research question, we were really thinking about the driving influence of context. And what's written in really both of these cells in this middle row doesn't actually reflect context within the cell. But what I think Lee and Jackie are saying is that the role of context actually comes into our theories about the role of context actually come into the entire row altogether. So what we say is that if a student, you know, the times when the students are going to think about this more are the times when the study disagrees with their strong opinion. So the role of context is coming in the fact that they have a strong opinion. And our evidence says that they're just going to pick it apart and they're going to use any means necessary, possibly statistical, possibly contextual, but they're going to use any means necessary to pick this apart. But the reason they're trying to pick it apart is because of their prior beliefs, because they had a strong opinion and the study disagreed. So I think our theory, I think what's in the cells still fits with our theory, but the role of context is not as stated explicitly in this second row as it is in the first row.
But how do we know they're not picking it apart just because they don't understand statistics?
That might be something we will have. That might be something we just have to state as a limitation of this. Either that, or we can just look at those particular responses a little more carefully and see if. See if we can go back and kind of see a more qualitative difference between them.
I don't know how much we really have to say that it's exactly that. I mean, it's kind of like the same idea of hopefully what we teach with our students, you know, there's a correlation between these two things. Right, there's a relationship here. Some people literally say it's exactly because of how they're feeling. I don't think we're ever going to be able to exactly say it's just because of their opinion that they did this. I just think we're going to be able to see that there's a relationship between them.
Yeah, and I mean, you have to, I mean, some of these responses, we've got so little to go on. I mean, I would have trouble deciding, you know, is it because they don't really understand the statistics, or is it because they, I mean, you've got a really good point, Tara. It's just I'm not sure that that's ever something that we could, without interviewing a student in depth, and maybe, you know, that was kind of the point, you know, what ultimately was the point of the interviews, which I don't get much chance to do, but just from these short little responses that we have, I'm not sure we're ever really going to be able to figure that out.
Yeah, that might just be a limitation of our study design, is that we can't really parse that out in this case.
It's a really good point. I think it's something we're going to have to, you know, when we talk about limitations of the study, how much we can get out of the data. Is that somebody else on the line? Hello? Hello?
Hello?
We have like some like other cross connection there or something.
Kind of sounds like it. I thought maybe someone's TV or something was on.
No, it's not me.
Not me. We don't have power, so.
Does it sound like a man's voice?
Yeah.
Okay, that might be my husband talking in the background. We're both on calls with work right now. And our house isn't that big. I thought I heard someone else pipe in for a second and say hello, but maybe that was just one of us.
No, I thought I heard that too.
Well, whoever it was, we either scared them away or...
or is secretly listening in.
I know. You might be hearing Josh in the background, too. But I at least put my daughter in front of a movie, so hopefully her interruptions will be minimal today. I am making a footnote in the table. For this cell, it should be noted that we cannot distinguish between students who... I want to say in this cell, and I might just put it that way, or students who have these codes because of
misconceptions about statistics.
Yeah, I'm going to say the influence of context or just misunderstand statistics. Is that what you...
Yeah.
And we might, if this cell turns out to have a lot of data in it, we might be able to go back and explore it. And that could be a more, say, qualitative discussion of the paper where we can give some examples. Okay, this student was clearly still bringing in contextual baggage versus this student, you know, who it just seemed like they were confused. They just really didn't know what was going on, that sort of thing. And we might be able to come up with a rough percentage of people that we can clearly define one way or the other versus people we couldn't really tell.
You can have a confused category?
Yeah. Well, that's what pre was supposed to be, but I'm not sure that works now.
Oh, yeah, I suppose that would be.
So I think 0-0 is totally, completely confused, right?
Yeah.
They were in another class.
What about in the second cell, though? So the way I was thinking of this, you know, it says that they appropriately recognize bias. Now, I realized when I was going through this is that in the ideal world, they would appropriately recognize bias. But we had some people who recognized the bias, but then were to some extent still inappropriate, or they said something else that was wrong. So we might need, I don't know, do the codes that I have in there, does that reflect that? Did anyone else notice a problem with this?
Well, what if they... Oh, hold on. Let me get my thought. I didn't actually write it out. I remember thinking it when I read the book. So we believe that they're going to call into question the method, not because of anything related to statistics, but just because they have a strong opinion and the study disagrees. Would that be an accurate statement for this entire row?
I don't know. In this row, we could say that there would be, or in this column, we could say that there might be some people who recognize the bias and just kind of know that you can't make broad conclusions off of a biased sample. And there may be some people who really have much more stronger opinions that are influencing. You know, like in some case, the people that kind of go overboard very clearly belong in this. So the kid that talked about the preppy woman from France, I mean, he clearly meets our hypothesis. He clearly fits in with our hypothesis, and I think he would belong in this row. I can't remember what – I think he had the bias because I think – so I think he would belong in the second cell.
What about
But then there were other people who just kind of said, no, we can't use this because it's biased, and that may be a perfectly reasonable answer that's not really being influenced by any sort of baggage, but we might not be able to tell that from their wording again.
Well, do we need to distinguish them between those people who have a zero for the second one, who haven't elaborated at all, versus those people who provide a UC or an M? See?
I don't know.
Are you only looking for UCs and MCs?
I think you might be able to put MM in here, too, because they may say, again, there were some people that had something correct, but then... Like, they had a correct idea about bias, but then still managed to screw it up somehow. Students always manage to screw things up somehow. There's always at least one. So you might still include MM in here.
But I don't think that relational would go in here. Because if they're relational, that means that they didn't focus on anything other than on sampling. I mean, relational by definition means that they have an understanding of statistics, that they're able to apply the concepts to a new problem, and that wouldn't really support our hypothesis.
That's actually an interesting point. Anyone have any other thoughts on that? I think I'm okay with excluding relational from this cell. Does
Does anyone have any
objections? I'm trying to think of any reason why I would think it would need to be included there, and I haven't come up with anything.
I mean, I think if we're going using the solo criteria, relational indicates someone who has a more advanced statistical understanding, right?
Yes.
So if they have that advanced statistical understanding, then they shouldn't be...
Yeah, then chances are they just in general don't fit with the spirit of our hypotheses.
Right. But then I'm going back to the research that showed the scientists in theory should have advanced levels of thinking, and they were doing it. But I think we'd be able to see it in their responses. I don't think we would have classified them as relational.
So what I have in this cell right now, if we exclude relational, then what I have is that they could have a U for the first question, and then I have it as any code for the second question. So that would include 0, U, or M. And then I have that they could have either an MC or possibly an MN and for the first question, and again, any code for the second question.
I don't think the zeros for the second question satisfies.
I guess, I mean, I think this is kind of like the left-hand box, very similar as well. So if it disagrees, they would might just be able to pull out just the bias sampling and just be able to point that out correctly. Without pulling in anything extra, it's very similar to our left-hand sidebar.
So you think we should exclude 0 from this cell?
No. But I think all I could say, you know, obviously samples are very biased. They only look at certain airports. I mean, again, I don't think that just because, I mean, especially when, in a sense, you know, you use bias sampling and it disagrees, I think it's because you say, yeah, it's biased, doesn't mean that you didn't use your opinion anywhere. You know, like you say, we say that they're appropriately going to say that it's biased because it was, but it also is partly why it disagrees with their conclusion, might be why they're able to focus on that correctly.
So, Jackie, you would still leave the 0 in there.
Uh-huh.
Lee, do you have a thought?
Yeah, I would leave the 0 in there because we're... This is a student appropriately recognizes biased aspects of the sampling method. So the 2 equals 0 means that they don't do any contextual stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they don't do anything extra.
Not
wrong. Yeah.
Okay. So maybe I'm not understanding why we would take that out as a possibility.
I guess to me, if they just say that, again, I'm not, I guess I'm just having problems with this whole row in general. Because if they just say that, well, it's biased because they only selected 3 airports. Okay, well, that doesn't tell me that that student provides support for our hypothesis. That just tells me that student recognizes that 3 reports are biased.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So you're concerned that a response that was coded that way doesn't really fit. Because that would get coded, what, 1U20?
Right. And
okay.
To me, that doesn't tell me that that absolutely supports our hypothesis. Again, going back to our overall research question.
Okay. So I was looking at it from a different angle. um,
I guess I can say I'm not looking for something that absolutely supports it. So I don't think we're ever going to be absolutely sure.
I don't think we are either, but I don't want to be accused of choosing coding methods that looks like we're swaying things towards our way of thinking. And to me, by saying, oh, well, just because this student said, oh, it's biased, and didn't say anything else, well, that satisfies what we think is going to happen. I don't know. To me, it's not enough evidence. I mean, and I'm not looking for an absolute either, but I just don't think that that particular scenario where there's a single sentence is enough evidence to say it supports our hypothesis.
I guess even looking at the boxes, to be perfectly honest, like when we're looking at the conclusion agreeing and the conclusion disagreeing, I feel like the upper right-hand box and then the middle left-hand box are the ones that are kind of our main focus. I mean, I guess I think of those two boxes as sort of the, where we should be able to pick up on it easier, if that makes any sense. So if you reuse the bias sample, but your conclusion agrees with you, you're not going to see that it's biased. Or that it uses random sampling, but it disagrees with you, you're going to be more likely to think that that's a really bad sample. So I guess I think of those two boxes that should be the ones that are really that are probably more support for our hypotheses and possibly some of these other boxes.
But we need to look for evidence that disagrees with our hypothesis, too. We can't just look for evidence that agrees with it. I mean, in a good study, you look, at both angles.
I'm not saying that we're not, but I'm saying that those two boxes are where the focus are. I'm not saying let's force those two boxes to say what we want them to. So I really think that those are the two boxes that are going to be the primary data for our hypotheses, not that they do say that they're right. And it kind of comes back to like what you say. I mean, if it's random sample and it agrees with you, how do you know they do that for a random sample? So it's harder when the method matches how you feel, if that makes any sense. So I think those are the boxes that are going to be harder to feel is absolutely sure about which code to technically go in there, just because they're the ones that are harder to distinguish between. Is it your opinion or is it just because it matches? Or that it's like the correct answer in a sense.
I mean, I'll do majority. If you guys want zero, I'm fine. We can put zero.
Now, I do see the point of where we make that dividing line is important between.
So, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm not sure we're ever going to feel completely comfortable.
Yeah. Maybe what we need to do, too, is come up with a complementary table that would disprove our hypotheses. And I think, like, a U0 is a gray area. We don't know. It doesn't really provide support for our hypotheses, but it doesn't really concretely disprove our hypotheses either.
So maybe we can
It just kind of is a nebulous response. They didn't give us enough to work with. So maybe we need to have, to some extent, a complementary table, too, that says, these are the codes that we feel provide a reasonable strength of evidence to support our hypotheses. And then these are the codes that we feel provide reasonable strength of evidence that's contrary to our hypotheses. And we have to look and kind of see which table is better. which table did we have? Ideally, we would want a lot of the data falling into the first table and not as much of the data falling into the second, but that is what we're testing, so that's what we have to see. So maybe we should exclude a zero from here and then think a little bit more carefully about what would the contrary table look like. That may be hard to do, but...
Well, I think this is just an idea. You know, after we decide what codes we want in which boxes, when we present the data, we could also, like, list these all in combinations. I mean, instead of compiling it all together, I mean, we're going to have all the data, so we could list all of the different combinations, maybe in, like, a ranked form. You know, this is the one that was most appropriate for this box, second most appropriate, third most appropriate, and then put the percentages of, you know, responses that went with that. We could parse it out a little bit more when we present the data.
Yeah.
Similar to what we started with on the poster, but then we changed it because it was too busy, where we said, okay, in this box, this was the code, this many students fell into it.
Yeah, I mean, if we end up looking at it and it's just a giant mess of numbers and it's too hard to understand, I mean, we could then compile it, but, I mean, for like a paper or something, we could actually, you know, have that all separated out so that if somebody says, okay, well, how many people actually responded this way? What percentage of people responded this way in this particular code combination? We would have all that information. So, you know, Tara's concerned that, you know, we're putting some combinations that maybe aren't as strong as others into a particular category or into a particular cell, at least we could say, well, this is, we kind of show that we did sort that out and we were conscious of that. I mean, it's still something obviously we need to talk about whether we want the zeros in there or not. But.
Right. I think that's a good idea. I like that idea a lot.
Okay, so for this box, I think we can all agree that if their second question was coded with a zero, that's not really good evidence. Like, that's not very clear or very strong evidence in support of our hypotheses. It kind of falls in a more middle level. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a gray area.
Okay.
So are we voting to take it out, or are we tabling it, or?
I am taking it out. So now, what I have now is that one can equal either U, MC, or MM. And two can be anything but a zero. And then I actually have a separate line where two is equal to zero, and I have that highlighted gray as to indicate it as a gray area. And so that's just kind of to reflect our discussion now, and we can figure out later what we need to do about that. Does everyone agree, though, with the U, the MC, and the MM in conjunction with the other codes, so anything but a zero for the second part, as being evidence for our hypotheses, reasonably clear or reasonably strong evidence for our hypotheses.
Moment.
So are we including like US's and MS's there?
That is a good question. What do people think about that? Again, I maybe based on the argument we used for the first row, we would need to exclude that or put that in a gray area.
Yeah.
So that would mean for two, we would just be left with UC, MC, and then we need to think about MB, but maybe. Well, yeah, because MB at least has one contextual item in it, so. What do you guys think?
I don't know that we can exclude the statistics for this one. What if they used as their argument that for the luggage, for example, suppose they felt really strongly that it was a problem, and the results that they got back was they had a, where it showed a problem, the average was 45, and what if they did a discussion of that, that they believed it was a problem, that the average was 45, this supported that, blah, blah, blah. Is that using their prior beliefs that it already is a problem and they're looking for that one piece of information, even though it's statistical, that supports that belief? Does that make sense at all?
Can you say that again, actually? I'm sorry, I was tinkering with the table, and so I wasn't listening as closely as I should.
What if they believe that, actually, we're looking at the disagrees column. So, okay, they believe it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I just talked myself out of my argument. Hold on. I think redoing it for myself, I think I just talked myself out of it. So if they think it's a problem and they get a problem where it was, no, never mind. I talked myself out of it.
So do you think we should include S's or not?
I was thinking that there might be a way that a reason to include S's if they were pulling something statistical out of it to support their prior beliefs.
But again, that might be the case where it's just not clear to us if it's to support their prior belief or if it's because they either do or do not understand statistics.
And since we're doing the disagrees column, it doesn't matter because it's irrelevant. Because I should have brought that up in the first row. So.
I guess one thing I'm thinking of, like, would it be if like, if they just start describing, well, this is only the average anyway.
Yeah, the whole idea. Yeah.
So, I mean, something like that, I could see, you know, saying, okay, this is a really biased sample because they only did this. And anyway, that's only, you know, the average. It doesn't tell you how everybody is.
We classify
that as statistical, right? I'm thinking
yeah.
Correctly.
But again, does it, you know, that they might, that I think is still an answer that might be a gray area. We don't know if they are kind of statistically misunderstanding the average or, you know, I remember actually there was one example where someone, I'm pretty sure they said this is only the average, and then they ended with the statement, I believe people are carrying heavier bags onto airplanes. And so in that case, it was clear that they had extra contextual baggage that was influencing their answer. In the case where they just say, well, this is only the average, I think we have to call that a gray area again and say, well, we're not really sure in that case what this tells us. So maybe the S's need to go into the gray area.
But if it's combined with the S with the contextual, the MBs, then that provides more evidence for us.
Yes. I think as long as you have at least one C in there, that provides evidence for us. Whereas I think maybe just the S's, in, it certainly in this cell might need to go into a gray area. Or maybe we just say, I don't know.
it might be easier to think about, like I said, think about which codes really do provide strong support, which codes really strong support for us, which codes are reasonable support, I'll at least say, reasonable support for us, which codes really don't provide reasonable support, and then everything else by default is kind of in that gray area. And we can present that. I think that's kind of consistent with the idea of the, like, the spectrum or the levels that Lee was talking about. So I think here someone could argue, we have to think about, you know, we want, eventually our goal is to get a paper, right? So we do have to be careful about making it look like we padded our coding or padded our table so that we certainly don't want to take those areas where it's not clear and say, oh, we'll throw them into the support column.
Right.
Because I think a reviewer will certainly crucify us for that. At the same time, it's unfair to us to throw them into the not support column, you know, the against column, because it's not clear. So I think we have to say this data wasn't clear, and that was probably a limitation of our study design that we used written response as opposed to interview, where we couldn't probe that to get some more clarity. So I think when we do this table, we should be careful about only picking those codes that really are going to provide strong support. And the truth is, when they're making purely statistical arguments, that is not necessarily strong support for our contextual hypothesis. It's a gray area. We don't know what it was that motivated them to make that statistical argument.
So it could be fun that we could go through all of this, and I'm not trying to be negative here, I'm sorry. But we could go through all this and find out, doing our hypothesis one way, there's not evidence to support us, but there's not evidence to not support us.
Yes, we could.
Right, so we could actually end up in a gray area.
Yes, we could. We could end up squarely in the gray area. And maybe in that case, maybe that's a sign that our coding scheme is lacking, and we might need to decide to go back and do a more holistic coding scheme or something. Or we might, I mean, that's, I think, a risk anytime you do a study, right? You can always come out with non-significant evidence.
But we could have a really nice section on things to do differently.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, I think our saving grace is this, is that we're really aiming, you know, we're kind of straddling the line between qualitative and quantitative, but I think we're certainly more on the qualitative side. And so we can paint a richer verbal picture. And we can, I think we will be able to find a few answers that really clearly indicate these biases, or we can provide some examples where things were really very vague and kind of paint the picture about, well, if we were to do this differently next time, we could maybe tease this out more. But yeah, it's totally possible that we could end up squarely in the gray area when all is said and done.
Well, maybe a secondary coding is to see if we can somehow classify where they're at. Well, I don't know if we could do it based on our answers. I was going to say where they're at in terms of their levels of statistical thinking. Because if they're all at a pre-structural level overall of statistical thinking, then really what does this tell us? Like kind of what Watson did. So in conjunction with how did they classify for our answers, where are they at in general? Do they have a lot of misconceptions about statistics and stuff? I don't know. We could do it now, but.
Yeah.
Are we ready to move on to the last row?
Yeah, it is 3 o'clock, so we should consider. So what I, for this row then, I pulled out the S's. So it now no longer says you could have anything for the second column. It says you could have a UC, an MC, or an MB. And for the first column, you could either have a U, an MC, or an MM. Is everyone okay with that?
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so moving, well, actually, sorry, to go backwards a little bit, going back to the previous cell, to the left cell in the same row, do we also need to exclude zeros and S's from the second column here?
First column or second column?
First column.
Second row.
First column.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
So this is the one where it is a random sample and they erroneously call into question the matters of sampling. Right now I have it as they could have any code for the second one, but do we need to exclude to exclude zero and exclude statistical code, purely statistical codes there?
I guess I still think it's fine to leave it. I don't know how everyone else feels, but.
I think we have to be careful, because if we have a P with a zero, then that student could have simply said that they think the sample size is too small. And that wouldn't really provide support.
Do you think maybe we should break this one up, like with P have separate question twos and with multiple have separate question twos?
I can certainly put P0 into the gray area as opposed to keeping it.
I think I agree with the P0, but I think, you know, once they have to have the multiple ideas, the 0 doesn't bother me as much because then it's, I mean, I know we only have it written possibly the first one, but you know them focusing on certain things. So if they're focusing on bad things possibly about the sample, though, I could still be a P. And that's where I think the P0, yeah, is definitely still a gray area.
Yeah.
So P, they either have to have, they need to have something contextual, so either a UC, an MC, or an MB.
Yeah. What
about if they have, the other thing I have in this box is that they have an MM for the first question.
Incorrect.
I think we just need to be careful with the zero, because if they had said that they randomly selected from however many airports, I don't remember, from 20 airports.
Oh, yeah, sorry. 20.
And that they still, that so it had a random sample, but they still believe the sample size was too small. And that was all they have, with no explanation of why they thought the sample size was too small. But they recognize that it was a random sample. That still doesn't support us.
I guess I'm having a hard time trying to always think of examples, but I almost feel like I could think of an example of any category that wouldn't support us.
I think if that's true, then I think we need to redo our coding system. I think we should be able to say comfortably in some cases. You know, I definitely think there are some codes that are more vague than others, but I think if we could argue against all of our codes, then I think we need to come up with a different coding system.
No, don't say that.
I know, but, I mean, that's realistic.
That's going to be hard no matter what you're doing. You're trying to take all these completely different responses and put them into just a few categories. I think no matter what, you're going to have the exception to the rule.
Yeah.
That we're never going to be able to have something that covers every possible venture out there until we have 500 categories and we have one data point in each.
Well, then maybe the problem is trying to just use the codes blindly to put them into this table. Maybe the problem is not with the coding system.
I know, but the whole point of the coding system is so it just makes it easier, because otherwise we should just spread each one and figure out which box it falls in. Or if it falls into any of the boxes.
I think I don't have problems with I think I'm having problems with the P's, when there's incorrect information mixed in with correct information. I think that's what I'm having problems with, in conjunction with no information in the second problem, in the second part.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, okay, let me make sure I'm completely understanding our hypotheses correctly. So we are really stating that we believe students are more likely to question the sample if the conclusion disagrees with their opinion. Is that kind of the general?
Good short way of stating it. That's how I understood it.
Yeah, that's how I understood it too.
Because then, I mean, I guess I feel like in that box, I'm not necessarily expecting any extra information that doesn't have to do with sampling. I wouldn't expect it. I mean, I would hope that, you know, I mean, if something that's great that would be there could be a P0 saying that they only sampled 20 airports, that's not enough. The sample sizes were nowhere big enough. You know, they only looked at American Airlines. This is not true of everybody. I mean, that's a perfectly acceptable response for someone that I would think could support our hypotheses. So how you distinguish between that and someone else, that's why I'm trying to get this idea of what more likely means. And I don't think, again, we can guarantee that just because a student falls in, that guarantees that the only reason they did that was because of their opinion. I mean, I guess I was thinking of more that we were trying to see if there's a relationship between their opinion and their statement here. It's not necessarily that one's causing the other one to happen, but just to see if there was a relationship and how that relationship changes, I guess, from each of the questions we're looking at, or based on the strength of their opinion.
So I think basically you're kind of saying two things. In some ways, we're almost making it a little bit more complicated than it needs to be. Because really what we need to know is just whether their opinion disagreed with the conclusion, did they pick apart the sample or not?
Yeah, I guess that's what I was thinking when I was looking at that one.
Yeah, that's sort of the first part of what we're, and that's what we're looking for from sort of the numbers. And then the second part of this is obviously we want to take a look at what everybody said and try to piece out as much as we can with all this coding. Can we figure out why they said what they said? Can we figure out some of their reasoning behind that? And I think that's what we're trying to do here. But maybe we're trying to combine two things into one. Maybe that's why we're having so much trouble. Does that make any sense?
But I think if we're going to take this table and relate it back to our overall hypothesis, that we need to think about that at this point. I don't think just saying, okay, well, this student disagreed and they called into question the sample erroneously. I don't think just that distinction addresses our overall hypothesis. I think this student disagrees and they erroneously call into question, and in their answer they've indicated some contextual or opinionated reason for doing that. I think that allows us to go back to our hypothesis with it.
No, I may have stated that too simply.
So do we need to think about this a little bit more based on some of the discussions we've had today?
Yeah.
I really wish the RAB was here now. This is when we really could use them.
Yeah.
Well, we could try and type up a summary of our question and send it to them, or we could ask them to join us on a call. I mean, I think they would be fine still helping us with something like this. We should send them the recording. If you're like, yeah, listen to this. Let us know what you think. I think this is a good point. I do think we have to distinguish between levels of evidence. Evidence that is stronger in our favor, evidence that is not that clear, and evidence that is actually more contrarian. Because I do think that is important.
Yeah. It's a quick question rolled in on that. So I want someone to try to explain to me, because maybe I'm misunderstanding, how someone in that cell making contextual statements supports the hypothesis more.
Well, I think the idea is if their arguments are purely statistical, then you don't really know what their motivating factor was. Was their motivating factor their opinion, the fact that this agreed with their opinion, that disagreed with their opinion, or was their motivating factor that they don't understand statistics well? And so I think the point is that it's not as clear. So the person who just says, oh, the sample size wasn't large enough, well, that's a really common, well-documented misconception that people have. Like if they make that proportional argument especially, that's just a common misconception people have. And so we don't know if that's because the study disagreed with their opinion and so they're just taking offense with the study, or if they just have that misconception and they would have had it in any scenario. Whether they had a strong opinion or not. And so I think that's why Tara is suggesting we might need to parse that out and treat that differently, because it's not against us, but it's not for us either.
So maybe we should be trying to really have two different sets of things, one that just looks for students more likely to do these things, and the separate one based upon can we figure out why they said that. Yeah, I guess I expect that most of the time in my statistics classes that students aren't going to probably put a lot of opinionated information in their response to do the statistics test.
Mm-hmm. But in some sense, our hypothesis does say that this contextual thing should override the statistical.
So I thought what we meant by the contextual is just having the problem set it, not necessarily that they're in their response putting in contextual matters.
But if the context matters, then it should be influencing their response. And I certainly think that there were cases, even though this was a neutral scenario to start with, I certainly think that there were cases where it was more clear to me that, yeah, they were bringing in contextual baggage or extra baggage, and in other cases it may not have been as clear. think if we were to say that, you know, then making a contextual statement does provide stronger evidence for our hypothesis, but the absence of a contextual statement is more of a gray area, I think that's reasonable. And I think we can accomplish that through our codes. I think it is important that our coding system goes beyond our hypotheses. Like, I don't think we should just code what we're looking for, because then we don't know what else was out there. So even though the statistical information really isn't very relevant to our hypotheses, it's still, I think, going to be informative to look and say, well, what percentage of people were doing this? And if that percentage is high, I think that should be expected given that they were in a SAS class and this was on their exam, so they were thinking statistics. But the flip side to that is if that percentage is actually really low in these cases, kind of those two diagonal cells that Jackie was talking about are in some way more pertinent to our just broad theory. If you're really seeing more of that driving force of the context there, even though these are statistics students on an exam, so even though this is kind of the prime time for them to be giving statistical answers, if you're still seeing that driving force of context, then I think that is actually very, very good support for our theory. So I think we should definitely keep the statistical parsed from the contextual as we are dividing up these codes.
Yeah, I'm definitely not saying that we should change the code and, like, you know, just ignore the context totally. I was just trying to figure out. So I kind of feel like we're almost have like a two-part question that we need to worry about. I don't know if one table is going to answer it all.
It may not. So that's why I'm wondering if we do need to go back and really think more about the spirit of our hypotheses. You know, this table was ultimately kind of my first take, but I always, with something like this, the more you get into a problem, the more you may understand the nuances of it. So if we need to come up with a second table or some other system here, then now that we are really in the data and kind of understand it better, then I definitely think we should do that. So maybe that's what we should think about for our next call.
I also think we should type up some sort of summary and just send it out to them, the RAB, just because they're not as involved with it as we are, so they may be able to look at it more objectively.
Yeah. Tara, do you think you could spearhead that summary and then send it to the three of us for feedback before we send it out?
Possibly.
Yeah.
When's our next call?
I don't know. We, based on the original schedule, was it 2 weeks from now, I think?
Mm-hmm.
Or was it 1 week? Are we on 1 week because we're in?
I'm in Daytona next week, so.
So that's why we weren't planning on something, so it would have been the week after.
Yeah, the 23rd.
If we have 2 weeks, I can do it because I have an exam and a paper and a bunch of homework assignments due in the two courses I'm taking next week. So I need to get that done first, but then I can do.
Okay. Does anyone have more free time this week coming up that they could tackle this so we could get it to IRB sooner, or should we just wait and do it next week?
I mean, Reb.
Yeah, what did I say?
IRB.
Sorry. Oh, that's an acronym.
Some group of people.
Don't send it to IRB, at least not mine.
I mean, if I can get a lot done this weekend, then I should be able to get this done early next week. It just depends how long it takes me to do everything else.
Okay.
Well, I can try to get the synthesis, kind of like a quick little email kind of written by tomorrow and sent out, because that at least might help you go from there, too.
Right.
I think I'm actually on notes this time, right?
I will assume yes if no one else thinks they are.
Yes.
Go with that. Perfect. I will do my best. So I'll try to get those done so that might help.
Sorry, I frustrated. Anyway, please, no one please take anything I said personally. I'm just trying to wrap my head around it, too.
No.
Yeah.
I think that has to be understood generally. It's important. It's better that we ask these questions now among ourselves than we have a pissy reviewer point this out to us in a negative review. So this is, I think, exactly why we're working in a group.
Did you just say
hopefully no one will. What?
Did you just say pissy or pissy?
I think she said picky.
Oh, no, I said pissy.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did.
All right.
Sometimes you have those where it's just something in the paper sets the reviewer off, and whether it's legitimate or not, from there on, everything's just downhill. And so that's what I guess that's what I was referring to.
I think I've seen my husband do that.
Yeah,
he's been reviewing, and something in there just really pisses him off, and then nothing that the person does after that is correct.
Yeah. Which in some sense is also evidence of our hypothesis. They form an opinion, and then everything else is colored through the lens of that opinion.
Yeah.
So I do think it's important that we hash this out and don't worry about offending people, because I don't think it's ever said in that spirit.
Do we want to talk about the last row before we end our call?
Yeah, and then did anyone actually look at the tuition data? Because we've got that to think about. Do you?
I did.
I skimmed my data.
All right, so vote last row tuition data or just end call.
Well, if we're going to send out to the IRB for...
The RAB, sorry.
I'm ruining it.
You started something early.
Yeah.
If we're going to send it out, then I think we need to talk about the last row.
Okay. So here, this is, again, a focuses on, which will hopefully make it a little bit more clear than the middle row. So here, they're focusing on matters relevant to selection. So I think what we had originally was... any code for the first variable in conjunction with a zero for the second variable should be seen as support of our hypotheses. And basically, anytime the first question in some sense outweighed the second. So anything with a zero, an M with a U, or an M with a U.
One can't be zero, though, because we can have a zero, zero.
Right, good point. Any but zero.
The only one I struggled with there was the P and the zero combination again.
Well, that's still focusing on selection, even though they focus incorrectly. Their spirit, they knew to talk about selection.
Okay.
And that's my take on it. Anyone who disagrees with that can feel free to voice their opinion.
And this one, I think relational would fall into. I think this is the only one that relational really falls into, this last row.
Yeah.
Does anyone have any other questions or comments on this row?
So far, I think that was the easiest row.
Yeah. In some sense,
I don't know if it's because we've done the neutral question or it's because it's easier.
Yeah, I think in some sense it's just easier because we're not expecting them to have baggage, so we don't have to try and parse it out. Like, it's just... But, yeah, I definitely think this one's easier. Although I will, kind of related to the tuition question, I had a question about... the tuition data, and I don't know if we want to get into this now or table it for next time, but I had a question about the tuition data where
I was wondering if it might open up the possibility of having a relational code for the first one with an extra statistical code for the second one. Not an extra contextual code, but an extra statistical code for the second one.
Do you have an example?
Yes. So this is, I think, something we have to decide about how we're going to code the tuition data. I noticed a lot more of those cases where people were really focusing on the kind of the logic of the specific conclusion. So they said, you know, oh, yeah, it's valid to say tuition increased because the p-value was significant. So they're pointing out the connection, which it connected in every case because we made sure it did, but they're pointing out the connection between the significance and the conclusion. And I wasn't sure if that was something we should be ignoring or if it was something we should be coding because it comes up a lot. And sometimes it comes up as the whole entire answer. So if we ignore it, we get no information from that student whatsoever. Other times, it's part of a larger answer. And so I wasn't sure what to do with that there.
I coded them as 0 for 1 and US for 2.
So you were coding it as an extra statistical argument, if it was their whole answer, certainly.
Yeah, and I had tons where that was their whole answer.
So I've had a lot, too. But then I've also had some people saying, oh, it was a random sample, it was a large sample, and the p-value was small. So, yes, this is a valid conclusion. And that's where I actually struggled with, okay, is this just purely relational? Or is it, because in my mind, some of them, I mean, the way I said that, I kind of chunked that up. But some of them I thought were fairly complete answers. Whether they're relational or not, I guess. I'm still always struggling where to draw the line between what's relational and what's just multiple.
So maybe think of the p-value kind of like when we do any of the mean comparisons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, this is 45 greater than 40. So, I mean, because, I mean, it's somewhat relevant. I mean, somewhat relevant. It's not based upon selection.
Yeah.
But it's somewhat relevant.
But what do we do if that's all they say then? Do we just not get any information from them? You know, in my mind, it may reflect a limitation of the question wording, or I don't know what it reflects, but I don't feel like we should just completely lose that information.
I think if it's all that they give, that we need to treat it just as an extra statistical idea, because it just demonstrates that they have, I mean, they used the statistical idea to write their answer, but they didn't look at the complete picture.
And I think it's different when it's by itself.
So could that be a part of a relational answer?
I'll see if I can find it.
So then is it a relational with a 0 or is it a relational with a US?
Well, and how close did everybody put this question to hypothesis testing in their course?
It might look right after, so I would expect that they're going to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of
mine, too, is, I mean, I think students were thinking that I wanted them to talk about the p-value, so.
Mine was actually on a test with no other p-value questions, and mine still did it.
Yeah, mine was in an in-class activity right after the ideas soon after the ideas of hypothesis testing had been introduced, because they had to understand what significant meant, and they had to understand what the p-value was. So I have an example here where a student says, yes, I believe the conclusion is reasonable. The sample of 50 in-state college tuitions was taken randomly, and the p-value of blah, blah, blah was significant. He lists the number. And then even puts in parentheses, significant below 0.05. The conclusion states that the in-state tuition had increased, and the evidence supports this.
I think that's relational. Yeah.
I think that's relational, too. So does that still get an R0, or does it get an RUS? Do you think the way he stated the p-value thing is still wrapped up into the relational part, whereas if someone had just said the p-value was significant, that would have gotten a 0 US? So, like, I'm wondering if it's okay if we're being inconsistent with the way we treat that p-value statement, or if it's actually okay given kind of the nature of what a relational answer represents.
I think it's okay to treat it different as long as we're specific about it. But I guess, and this is maybe where my terms are different. Like when I look at, you know, question two, and I look at you and we have it defined as only one extraneous idea. For me, extraneous means nothing to do with the problem, personally. I mean, it's not really relevant information to the problem even. So I don't know if I should be interpreting extraneous that way. Because obviously p-value is useful in that question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not relevant to selection, but it's still relevant, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I think, though, if we're going to say that what you just read was relational, that they have to have that p-value component, because then if that student, if we have another student who just gave the list, okay, it was random and whatever the other thing you said was, that would be multiple correct. So in this case, I think relational means they're looking at the whole picture. They're not only looking at the sampling scheme, but they're also looking at the results, and they're tying the two together in their mind. I mean, they're tying the two together in their answer. Like, they're covering all their bases. Does that make sense?
Well, I had, so then I had one that said, yes, because the sample was random and large enough to conduct a hypothesis test. Would you call that an R, or would you call that an NC?
If we give the other one an R, I would call that an MC. Mm-hmm. If we're going to give that one an R, then we're going to have to do what you suggested and code the other one as an R with a US, I think.
Which I'd be nervous about doing that, is because then that US is probably going to be different than some other USs.
But would, do you think in that case we would still give the answer an R, the other part of the answer an R?
It's hard for me to think about what an R would look like in that problem without a p-value.
I agree. I think for relational, they would have to know that the sample was good enough, or it was random, that it was okay to generalize, and that that the p-value showed it was significant or it wasn't significant, depending on the scenario.
Lee, what do you think?
I see Tara's point, because it really is, I mean, we've been defining relational as sort of seeing the entire picture. I guess I'm a little hesitant, because for what we're looking for, p-value isn't necessarily part of the sampling method. I think this is going to cause a lot of trouble with the coding. Not that that's why we should decide anything, but
I'm expecting we're going to have like little bullets like we do, you know, at the other one. Like, okay, if the sample is random and they only mention sample size, so, I mean, I think we're going to have the for this particular question thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think as long as we make sure that those are clear, that we also, when we go back, okay, we know if it was classified as this, this is what it meant for that answer.
I actually thought these were easier to code than the luggage questions. I really did. I thought they were very, I thought these were much easier than the other ones.
This is, I think, the biggest question that I've run into, because when I first read it, I interpret it as, the first time I read it, it was, I think, the whole answer. And so to me it seemed very natural. Okay, there's nothing relevant to selection in there. The whole answer was statistical, so it was a zero US. Then the next time I saw it, it was a part of an answer. And then I read it as, oh, well, that's just like them saying 45 is greater than 40, so it's okay to say there's a problem with weight. You know, they're saying, yeah, the p-value is less than 0.05, so it's okay to say that the tuition rose. And so I then ignored it. And then as I was going through, I realized I was kind of treating it differently. Then I got to, you know, this kind of answer where I was like, oh, you know, he really did treat, he covered every aspect, so that's definitely an R. But then I'm like, okay, so in some cases I'm coding this as extra statistical information. In some cases I'm not coding it at all. And then in other cases I'm coding it as an R, you know, as a piece at least of an R. And so that was when I realized I was being a little inconsistent with this. Or you could make the argument I was being inconsistent. We could say in some, you know, to some extent these things do depend on what else is written. We're trying as hard as we can to make some general rules, but to some extent some of these things will depend on what else is written. So we could say this is legitimate based on this problem, but I figured it was something then to ask you guys. No, go ahead.
So if they get a zero U.S., if they basically give the p-value answer and don't talk about the sample at all, does that mean they basically do not fit in our table anywhere the way we have it now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because we're not really getting much information from them. I think it would still be important to kind of summarize to people on this particular question. Most of our sample didn't give us an answer that really helped us one way or another. That could have been a limitation of the question or where the question was placed in the course, that sort of thing. So I still think it's important to record that information, but I don't think they give us any information towards our hypotheses.
Okay.
Because in my mind, that's not clear. Are they saying that just because they understand that's how p-values work, or are they saying that because they felt very strongly that this was true or not? I did actually have one student. Let me see. What one was it? I laughed when I read this one. The other thing I'm noticing is people talking about practical significance. And that, I think, is extra statistical information where they're drawing the line between statistical significance and practical significance. So I actually had a student say that even though the test was not statistically significant, the data does show a practical significance, so saying that that difference of $80 really does make a difference. And then she puts in parentheses, especially in the eyes of a student paying, but that may cause response bias, and I kind of flagged that, and I was laughing. It's like she just basically articulated our theory for us. Like she's admitting, I feel this way because I have to pay tuition, but that might mean I'm not being very objective about it. So I think there are some cases where they're giving us information that's clear, that fits our hypotheses, but then if they had just stopped with, no, the data is not practically significant, then what the data is or is not practically significant, and that doesn't really help us one way or another. I think that's that gray area again.
So I'm going to be honest. I haven't had a chance to read through much of my data in a while for this one. Do you feel like with what you've read so far that there could be an R without a p-value comment?
I would say the closest one that I saw to that was the second answer I read, where the student just said the sample is random and large enough to conduct a hypothesis test.
I don't think that's relational, because they didn't really tie it all together with anything. That's more like two separate things, you know what I mean? Just like a list. This is meant, this is meant. Okay, we can do it.
And then the only one I can really think of well off the top of my head is they're addressing the p-value without maybe saying it by saying, you know, and the test was significant, possibly, you know, on that line, you're kind of hinting at a p-value, possibly. So, I mean, it just would be helpful for us to do it, and then we can get rid of it if necessary. I mean, this might sound stupid, but I like to do an R and an R+, like, you know, R plus the p-value.
Well, there is an extended abstract. Is that extended abstract, or I'm not sure it really is, but
I thought extended abstract was like going to a whole new area and applying it.
That's kind of what I thought too, which is why I don't think we've ever really imagined we would have extended abstract here. But so, I mean, you could code in R0 and you could code in RUS, and that could be our way of kind of signifying that it not only had the right idea about selection, but it also knew to tie in the p-value to the conclusion. I think basically what we need to do is we need to pick what feels best to us and just go with it. And I actually got to the point where I stopped coding because I felt like this would really affect my how I approach things. So I think based on what Tara and I have seen, I think we're both okay with the idea of if their whole answer just says, this is a valid conclusion because the p-value is less than 0.05, or then that is extra statistical information, so it would get a zero US. Does everyone else seem comfortable with that?
Yeah, I think so.
Then what we have to decide, what we have to do is when it's part of a larger answer, do we, and this may depend on the particulars of a response, but we can either, I think if we're coding it when it's the only thing on the page, I think we should code it when we see it in connection with other things. So I don't think we should ignore it. But we might decide that it's either necessary for relational, so those students get an R0, or we might decide that we want to pull it out separately. So they could either get an MCUS or they could get an RUS.
Here's a problem with coding it just by itself. I have one student who said, small p-value supports the alternative hypothesis, so yes, it's valid, so that gets a US. Then I have another student who only stated, the p-value shows us all the observed values plus the more extreme values under H0. That's all he said. Is that a OUS too? Because one of those obviously is a much more relevant response than the other one.
Well, I guess this might be where, again, I'm reading too much in. So what does extraneous mean? Am I supposed to read this as only one extra statistical idea or literally extraneous?
I was imagining it as not relevant to selection. That's what, when I was defining those two variables, the first one was relevant to selection, so that would include both random or biased as well as sample size. And then the second one was irrelevant to selection. And so I think a p-value is irrelevant to selection. And in my mind, I wasn't capturing correct or incorrect because I felt like it didn't really matter because it was irrelevant to selection, which is what we were interested in.
So in your mind, for our study, both of these answers fall under the same place?
Yeah, because they are neither one of them is addressing the importance of selection.
Right.
And that is still a very, very important piece. So in my mind, I think they would both be a zero US, and I think they both give us that same amount of information that the student, for us, our purposes is that they didn't acknowledge selection at all. They were caught up in something else. So far, what I've seen are people that talk about the p-value or people that talk about practical versus statistical significance. So we could kind of keep a running list of what we're seeing in that U.S.
What did you do for people who talked about the actual increase? Like with an increase of only $80.18, that's rather small. Did you count
that? Those are the practical significance people. A lot of them talked about it in that light. That's something we actually have in a learning objective in our course, is to talk about when a study might be statistically significant, but the results aren't practically significant. An $80 increase doesn't make a difference in anyone's bottom line, that sort of thing. So far, the ones I'm seeing only brought it up in that lens, and I was just giving them a US.
But if they don't bring it up in that lens, would you consider it contextual? Like if they just say an increase of $80.18 is small?
Yeah, that I might consider contextual, because I think using, you know, based on our learning objectives, practical significance is almost, it's not quite a vocabulary term, but that idea is almost, you know, it's something that we want them to understand. So I would consider that statistical for our course. But if they didn't say that, then yeah, I could see how it certainly has more of a contextual feel.
Well, that's what I'm, because I do, I teach practical versus statistically significant as well, but if they don't specifically mention it, I don't feel like, you know, we know that that's where they were going. So I counted those as contextual if they didn't actually say $80.18 might be, you know, statistical but not practically significant.
I haven't come across those yet, but that's good to think about because I'm sure there will eventually be some. So if they say practical significance, that's an S. If they don't, but they're talking about $80 not being a big deal, then that's a C. We could also get some people who talk about 80 being, well, I had a student who I guess talked about 80 being a big deal. She was also the one who pointed out that might be response bias, so I flagged her as a C kind of for that reason. Maybe I should go back and give her an MC. So, going back to the people that do talk about the p-values, saying, oh, yeah, this is a valid conclusion because the p-value is significant, are we coding that as an S if it's not also appropriately accompanied by random sample, large sample, oh yeah, and the p-value agrees, and the p-value is significant.
Say that one more time.
Sorry, that may not have been very well articulated. So, hang on a second. I'm on the phone right now. I'm sorry. I'll talk to you in 1 minute. Movie's over. There are some people who say it was a random sample. It was a random sample, a large enough sample, and the p-value was significant, so therefore it's a valid conclusion that tuition increased. That can go in as an R if we feel it reaches that R. But if we have someone who falls short of an R, does that information about the p-value then all of a sudden get kicked over into the second question where it becomes a US?
So it would be an MC and a US?
Either it could be an MC in the U.S. or it could be an MM in the U.S. It could, you know, or it could really be any code in the first one in the U.S. It's just a question of it could, sometimes it could get pulled into the R that's a part of the first question.
Well, it might just be then easier for us to always just count the p-value as the U.S. and when we know when it's an R or U.S., okay, that was just p-value.
That's another possibility. We had said that a R has to go with a zero, but maybe that's not the case here, and that actually is part of what I was wondering. So is everyone comfortable with the idea of an R and a US in some cases?
As long as the US is only addressing the p-value.
I agree. I think if it's doing something else, then you can't have the R with it.
Yeah. So we're saying that we could have somebody who has a relational response as it directly relates to sampling, but
mm-hmm.
never makes reference to the p-value. Versus somebody who has a truly relational response, which actually does pull all the components together.
I think we're just going to leave ourselves open to that door. We might end up going through the entire thing and never feel like anything possibly reaches an R0 for us.
So
I think that way we're just open to it. We might find out we didn't really have any R zeros for this one.
So a truly relational response would be an RUS. A relational response as it applies to our hypothesis solely will be an R zero. Is that what we're saying?
Well, I think what Jackie's saying is that we may just find here that the only way you get R's is in conjunction with a US. Everything else may be an MC.
But we're leaving it open.
Yeah.
Just in case.
Well, yeah, I don't think we...
I start with the two more codes. That way we don't have to go back and recode.
Shall we put it to a vote? Allow both... Just leave it so that you could have an off with just talking about sampling. But then if you add in this p-value thing, you would get an RUS versus restricting it so that you have to have both the sampling and the p-value piece to get an R. How many people are okay with an R independent of p-value, mentioning p-value?
I'm okay with the idea. I just need a steel index to believe it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of one that would do that, but I'm
that's
okay.
That's the thing. I don't mind leaving the door open. I just don't. I want to see an example of what fits into it.
Okay. Well, then how about for the meantime and for the sake of all of us getting on with life today, we leave the door open, but we flag those responses and send them and say, here, I think I found an example of this. What do you guys think? And discuss whether or not we see that as an MC or whether we see that as an R independent of p-value. Does that sound good?
That works for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, sweet. So in general, when they talk about p-value, we will code that as a, when they appropriately talk about p-value, we will code that as a US. And we'll have to see, based on the rest of the answer, what else is going on. Let's just leave it at that for now, and then we'll see what else comes up. I just had the horrible thought that they could say the p-value stuff correctly, but then add in a whole bunch of other jargon and mumbo-jumbo that's incorrect, and we could end up with an MS that doesn't really help us much. But let's deal with that when we come to it. I think I've reached the extent of brain power for the day.
That's our assignment for next time.
That is a good question.
So I have kind of a list. So we're supposed to relook at our table after our discussion and possibly look at the extremes of what fit into those boxes versus kind of like maybe like hierarchy them. That's what I kind of was hearing. Like what most supports it sort of down to what may support it. Does that sound right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I have that we have Herla's data that we need to start looking at encoding that she sent us, which I need to make sure I can open my zip file she sent me. And then we need to start getting our tuition data, both of which we're supposed to kind of be doing our buddies with, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
We decided that an R could be with a zero or a US for the tuition data. A p-value gets coded as a US. And we need to send any R's we find without a US around to see if everyone agrees.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I'm assuming at some point we want to send our data to somebody. Is this Herla again?
Sure. I'm happy to take it.
Or we want to start looking at, and I can't remember your exact deadlines. Are we supposed to start looking at the MACPC 2? And because it's 2 weeks, that's one reason I'm asking. Like, if time start looking?
I guess so. I don't know. Let's just try and get this done, because I have a feeling this is a lot, and we can, if we feel like things are actually moving smoothly, because I did agree with Tara that these did seem somehow a little bit easier, based on the sample of, you know, like two dozen or so that I had graded today, except for that one issue I had where I realized I wasn't sure. Now that that's sorted out, I think this will go through relatively smoothly. So if we're finding that, yeah, we're sailing through this, then we can be in touch via email and agree to do MACPC. because we are, I mean, we have a hard deadline here that we're coming up on probably faster than any of us care to think about, really. So I say let's not put it on the agenda for now, but let's be in touch via email.
Okay. Herla, was I supposed to get something from you, luggage data from you?
Yeah, I emailed it. Did you not get it? I think I meant to catch it.
No. You might want to try, because Capital tends to bounce stuff a lot. You might want to try my other email address so I can text that to you.
I'm pretty sure like when Tara tried to zip us something, like Lee and I both haven't had issues for you, didn't we, Tara?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I got yours. I was able to open it.
Okay, so good. And Tara said she was able to open it. Is it lvslawson@me.com?
Yeah.
Okay, I will send it to them. Both came up, and I picked the Capital one, but I will send. I should put them both in there.
Yeah,
I am sending that now.
Okay.
So that'll go through. And I basically, Lee, it looks like you have a lot of sections, but then when you open them, several of them only have 4 pages in them. So we all ended up with between 37 and 40 students. So it actually worked out quite nicely in terms of dividing it.
And don't forget when we send Herla our data.
Thank you. Please stand by.